seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Well, you're all very welcome to Golf Weekly. We'll start with an apology. It's Thursday, and obviously we should be coming to you on a Tuesday, but lots of stuff has been going on that has been taking us away from the studio. Gary, of course, when you have a pro golfer as one of your staples, you have to pay the price for absences when he's playing golf. So Gary's been playing a lot of golf. I've also been away doing a bit of traveling, and between that and work and all the rest of it, just Tuesday didn't happen. So I apologize on behalf of the whole team to all of you, but hopefully we'll have a bit of a pod coming to you today. One man who is as reliable as clockwork is Dave McIntyre, always available. How are you, Dave?
How are we doing? Not sure what that says about my schedule, but...
Well, it says you're a man to be relied upon. That's what it says.
We'll take it as a positive.
Indeed. Johnny Caldwell is going to join us in Gary's absence. As I said, Gary is playing golf. So he'll join us in just a little bit. In the meantime, we had the Charles Schwab over the weekend, which actually turned out to be quite exciting towards the end. Today is the first day of the Memorial Tournament. It's also the first day of the US Women's Open at Riviera. We're going to discuss all of those things. I don't know if you saw the news breaking today, Dave, that Bryson will likely play at the Irish Open.
I did not see that.
Yes,
no.
Yes.
Been out and about all morning. That passed me by. That's huge news.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to say might or will. I'm just looking at the... sorry, let me just get the headline just so as not to make an absolute idiot of myself. It's the Irish Times are saying Bryson DeChambeau may play in the Irish Open at Trump Tombeg in September. Well, may is better than won't.
Yeah, definitely better than won't, but it does seem vague enough. Obviously, he's a Trumper, so it wouldn't be a huge shock if he's been convinced by... his old pal to turn up in Doonbeg. It would certainly add another layer of intrigue to an event that is going to carry certain levels of it in all senses of the word, no matter what. But it is a smart move from Trump. If he, I don't know how much of a hands-on approach he has in this, but he's obviously got one or two other things supposedly should be taking his attention away from a golf tournament on this side of the water later in the year. But I wonder, has it been brought to his attention like that this may not be the most controversy-free event that he has his name on over the next couple of years? And bringing Bryson would certainly take an awful lot of the attention away from some of the side issues and have more people maybe focusing more centrally on the golf.
Funny, I watched Bryson warm up and tee off on the first on the Friday or the Saturday at Portrush in the Open. And he, look... like him, loathe him, don't care about him. He's an electric presence. The crowd were like absolutely on tenterhooks as he's like walking to the first tee. And even though he hit a kind of a shitty drive on the first, but the crowd, and particularly young people, like young kids, and like they were just like cheering his name. You know, he's box office. I just hope that if he does end up teeing it up at Doonbeg, I just hope he gets his alpha torque and gamma torque sorted out. You know, obviously this is perplexing him at the moment.
Yeah, he's not really having a great time out on the golf course, is he? Another at Valderrama this week, and they've probably teed off already as we record here, but he was shocking at the PGA Championship. You know, just really has seemed to have lost his game completely. The Masters seems to have taken a little bit of a toll on him. Clearly, in the background, there are all sorts of contractual discussions going on, and whether or not he returns to the PGA Tour is the focus of a lot of people's attention. He's clearly wants to return to the PGA Tour, but so desperately wants to be wanted. And I mean, all this YouTube talk is rubbish, obviously, but I just wonder, is there so much going on that outside of his golf game, in his business dealings, I guess, that it's actually taking away from what he should be concentrating on, which is trying to win more majors and figuring out the correct path to get himself back to contending for the biggest tournaments on a more regular basis.
Well, he's got AI as a friend now. Did you see that? He gave a presser there during the week where he was saying that he retreated to his hotel room and checked in with AI to see to help with his path, his swing path. I mean, if you had to pick a golfer, if I was to say to you, pick a golfer in Europe, anywhere in the world that is most likely to use AI as a teaching tool, surely Bryson DeChambeau would be the one that would do it.
Well, is it any more outrageous than the first people to use TrackMan, for
No, no,
example?
no, 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 no. Well, I mean, in that TrackMan, sorry, I know what you mean. I'm not suggesting that using whatever technology is available to you is kind of crazy. I just mean is that ultimately, I guess similar to TrackMan is the data it gives you or the response it gives you is only a reflection of what you put into it. And with TrackMan, you make a swing and it'll respond in kind. With AI, you put in the data that for or whatever, you put in the prompt and it'll give you an answer based on that prompt. So sure, I mean, I just think Bryson, you can fix that on the driving range, not at the computer screen, but.
Well, it may not necessarily be the case that he's the only golfer or the first golfer to have turned to AI to assist his swing and his technique, but he may be the first one to discuss it publicly and openly.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
And he is always the man who tries to play up to that persona of being the scientist, the mechanic, the guy who has all the answers because he's relying on pure hard data. And I just wonder, when he says that out loud, does he think that that puts him in a better light? Does he think that that underlines his status as the most scientific approacher of the golf swing in the game?
See, to me, and maybe you disagree with me, to me, Bryson DeChambeau he's what an incredibly unscientific person would imagine a scientific person would seem like. I imagine that to anyone with half a science with a scientist background would just listen to half the stuff he comes out with, and that's absolute horseshit. I don't I think Bryson loves numbers, and like even when you watch the relationship he has with his caddy, everything is based on numbers, and it's an incredibly complicated set of details that the caddy feeds him, and he clearly responds to that. And look, that's the way he's wired, fine. But the idea that somehow that he has a kind of a mechanical mind, that somehow means that he's like this really knowledgeable scientist, I don't think one means the other.
Yeah, well, look, he did cast doubt on the moon landings just a couple of weeks ago.
I mean,
So
yeah, anyway.
that's a little
Anyway,
window
look.
into how his mind may or may not work. Or was it that he cast, not necessarily cast doubt on the
But it
moon
doesn't.
landings, but cast doubt on the footage of the moon landings since that stage? Not necessarily that man hasn't been on the moon, but that maybe the film that we're all used to watching of Neil Armstrong and his pals down the years was staged. But
Yeah, I
even to
mean,
think that that's staged is gives you an insight into his character as well.
well, it's pretty bonkers. Look, regardless of the crowds that'll show up at Doombeg in September, and if Bryson does show up, they're not showing up to hear him wax lyrical about science. They're looking, see, hit the ball a very, very long way. So, look, I think Bryson DeChambeau, his presence at the Irish Open will be a huge boon for the Irish Open. I hope he does show up. I hope he does. I mean, it'd be more interesting as if Donald Trump shows up, like Ryder Cup style, comes in a helicopter and pulls focus from the golf for however length of time he's there.
And adds massively to the security bill
Yeah,
and
that's
all
true.
of the
That the
headaches in the local area. And
oh
good
yeah.
God.
Oh, I guarantee you the US Treasury won't be paying that bill. That'll be very much footed by your tax euros and mine. Anyway, look, let's move on. Come here. Before we get into the actual the pro golf or the interesting golf, Dave, I've got to tell you, I had a bucket list experience at the weekend. So the friend or the brother of a friend of mine has a house that is on the Wentworth estate. So I was invited to, you know, spend the weekend, and I got a chance to play the West Course on Sunday, and it was extraordinary, can I just say?
That is the course that stages the PGA Championship.
Yes. Yeah,
Okay.
it's the one. It's the one. And
So let's just get straight to the point. Did you
the
go for it on
18th.
18?
Yes, I did. And I'll tell you. So anyway, we had like my friend's brother wanted the three of us that were his guests to have like a memorable experience. So he got us all caddies. My caddy was Stuart, who's an incredibly nice guy. Really, really, and just super helpful. Gave me the line on every hole. And on 18, and I was playing quite well. On 18, I hit a really, really good drive that anyone who knows Wentworth, there's bunkers on the left, and then just beyond the bunkers, there's kind of a dip that goes into the flat part. And once you're in the flat part, you've got about 195 to the pin or to the green. So I hit a pretty good drive that went down into the flat part. And as we're coming off the tee, so the three other lads all kind of went a bit shorter. So they were all kind of level with the bunkers. And Stuart turns to me and goes, "You're going to have to go for it. You can't not." And I was like, "All right." And the others were all like, "Yep, you're going for it. You're going for it." So coming off the 18th tee. Anyway, so I went down and so I took a five rescue. And Stuart, very, very smartly, as someone obviously with the experience of the place, he says to me, he goes, "There's a bunker right of the green." And he goes, "Ignore the flag, just aim at that bunker. And anything like, look, if you're in the bunker, you're fine. If you miss the bunker, everything goes from right to left." And I'm like, okay. So I pulled it, and say the flag was cut front left. So I hit the green left of the flag. And it just bounced once and then just trickled into the water.
It was almost perfect.
Almost perfect, but I got up and down for a par, so I was
Oh,
very, very
great.
happy. Yeah, I
And
mean,
overall, how's the course? Obviously, the PGA Championship isn't until September, so they've got 3 more months
it's
of.
amazing. It's amazing. The greens are spectacular. The greens are, as you'd imagine, with the kind of money to be a member of a course or to be part of the Wentworth estate, like you're talking, I mean, Mega Millions. And so look, the curation of the course, oftentimes I think that sometimes you can go to these kind of marquee courses, and Wentworth is definitely a marquee course, and sometimes the course itself can be just bland, whereas the facilities are all class, or the maintenance of the fairways and the greens is all class, but the course itself doesn't present a huge amount of interest. No, like Wentworth, the West Course is terrific. All 18 holes are brilliant. It was interesting. So the halfway house is between the eighth and ninth, just the way the course is drawn out. And so we stopped off and just to get a drink and like a chocolate bar. And who comes out of the halfway house who's playing in front of me? One Mr. Kevin Peterson. Yeah. And he, I tell you, Dave, he's an impressive looking dude. Even now, years after his retirement, he has maintained himself in good shape. So we kind of clock eyes. Now, obviously, he's never met me before, but I look at him, and often is the way when you meet someone that you recognize, someone who's famous. I just went, "So how are you playing?" Like this. And he just went, "Steady, steady." I mean, but could be better. And he goes, "But that's golf, isn't it?" And that was it. And with a smile, off he went. That
Yeah,
was
I have
that.
to say now you need to work on the accents. You've
Oh yeah, no,
taken
listen,
off
it's
your
a
English
shitty.
caddy
I
so
kind of.
far, and now KP, which just said his sort of mangled South African English accent. But yeah,
Yeah.
look, that's we're not going to hold that against you,
I saw John Terry in the clubhouse.
right? Did you go
Yeah.
up and say hello to him?
Nope.
No.
No. I'm with Wayne Bridge, I'm afraid. Sorry. No.
Oh my God, that's going a good bit back.
Yeah, no, no. Do you know what it was? Oh, I will say this. So besides the golf, they have like oodles of bars and restaurants, and but the facilities, like the they have a big tennis center. They have paddle courts, as you'd
Yeah.
imagine. They have a spa, they have a swimming pool, and everything is five star. And so much so that like you go into the car park, and all the cars are like top of the range Range Rovers, Maseratis, Bentleys, everything. It's just like you're left in no doubt that very, very wealthy people are members of this club. And, and as a one day experience, I have to say it was quite special. But, anyway, look, it was good fun, and now we're back.
There you go. Well done.
So meanwhile, on Sunday night, I sat down and watched the last round of the Charles Schwab. I must say, even though, like, Russell Henley, whatever, his finish was so exciting, I thought.
Well, it's probably the best finish of the year.
Yeah, no
Like,
question.
to birdie 16, 17, and 18, I think he holed somewhere between 45 and 50 feet worth of putts. None of them were even remotely close to the hole. And then obviously stitch one on the first playoff hole and hole that for a fourth consecutive birdie is an unbelievably brilliant way of winning a golf tournament. And every one of those putts had to drop. He used the full width of the hole on at least two of
Indeed, he
those.
did. Yeah.
And his drive in 18 was monstrous. Like,
Oh. So the
that's
putts he
just.
hit on 16 feet on 16, 16 feet again on 17, and then just 2 extra feet on 18, an 18 footer. What really would have been perfect, the symmetry would have been a 16 footer on 16, a 17 footer on 17, and an 18 footer. But look, I'm not going to quibble with, the symmetry of the universe, but yeah, as you said, like he made like some acreage a putt to force the playoff. That drive in 18, yeah, savage.
And then he obviously was playing with nothing to lose pretty much for
Nope,
the
yeah.
last 90 minutes of his round. And that maybe freed him up a lot. Whereas Eric Cole was playing in a very different way. He was just marooned really on 12 under par after he made that birdie in the par five at 11 and just couldn't really get anything going. He was playing like a guy who's never won before, who's already lost to a couple of second place finishes and lost in a playoff of the Honda Classic 3 years ago. He was trying to defend his way to victory, where Russell Henley was just going, I'm just going to hit every shot with nothing to lose here. He's obviously won a few times already, so he was the guy playing without any pressure, and that showed in the way that he played. But if one of those doesn't drop, and what is a brilliant display of putting, you do need a certain amount of luck for each of those to find the bottom of the cup. It's hard on Eric Cole, who is a real journeyman golfer. He's a guy who you feel what you would love to see win, and it would be a big story. But it's another lesson in this top level sport. You have to go and get it. Every so often, something will fall into your lap, but
Yeah.
you have to go and get it. And he wasn't able to do that on Sunday. And I think he's really going to have to think long and hard about this one. This is going to be a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, and what did you say? He was marooned. Yeah, he definitely stalled. Like the double on nine kind of threw him a little bit off the rails. Now he birdied 11. He was kind of back in the lead then at 12 under, but just parred his way home. I thought the misses on 17 and 18 were the ones that ultimately, but it's a sign of a player, and you put it like you said it yourself. It's like Russell Henley played with nothing to lose. He's won before, so he knows how to win. Eric Cole's never won before, and he had that kind of like just managing his game home. And like when you have Russell, I mean, look, in fairness, Eric Cole must be looking going like you're sitting there going, how on earth is he making, like, okay, he makes a putt on 16, then he watches Henley make another putt on 17, and then he makes another putt on 18, and you're like, ah, oh, here, come on. So I'm going to go with Eric Cole. Obviously, that kind of, first night nerves definitely played a part. He had the win, or certainly he was in contention to win, and just couldn't get it done. Just needed a birdie on either 17 or 18. But I wonder if the smart move, thinking wise, is for him to kind of walk away going, you cannot countenance for a guy making that many putts in a row to come back to level it. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's hard to legislate for that to happen,
That's
but
it.
it does happen.
Yeah, it does. Of course it does, yeah.
But I suppose when you have that sort of a lead and nobody else seemed to really be able to get anything going at the back nine either, Alex Smalley and Ben Griffin were thereabouts, but they were struggling to really. The only guy who was holding the putts was Russell Henley.
Yeah.
But what has happened to Eric Cole here is difficult for him to stomach. For more, apart from the fact that he missed out on this tournament and this victory. what the win would have given him in terms of his schedule and taking the pressure off him when it comes to exemptions, the money that he's burned up in that back nine, because, like,
Oh,
you
stop.
know, it's a
I
big
know.
check that Russell Henley has walked away with. He started the day outside the top 80 in the FedEx Cup standings, and obviously he's gone up 30 odd places with the second place finish. But even the fact that Smalley birdied 18, which meant that Cole did actually finish second on his own, but
Yeah.
he's up into in the mid 40s now in the FedEx Cup. But like he gave up so much, and it's
I
just
know.
really hard, as the pros themselves say, it's really hard to win out here. And is Eric Cole going to get a better chance? Like, overall, what did you make of the Colonial? I like this golf course. I've
Yeah.
always liked watching it. It's a kind of a difficult slot for it in the schedule because most of the big hitters aren't going to come back until the Memorial, which is obviously starting today. So may not even play that, and we'll have an eye on what's going to be happening at Shinnecock Hills in a week's time. It's never going to have the big names, but it's a really easy golf course to watch a tournament on
I
television.
agree. I
It looks good
absolutely.
on the eye, and
Yeah, I couldn't agree
sun
more.
is always out, tree lined on a lot of holes. I love that old parkland look, and it's not necessarily a massive shootout either. You know, 12 under par is a pretty competitive score, and not one that's you're going to take a one quick look at the leaderboard and go, oh well, that was clearly just a pitch and putt contest, a bomb it and gouge it and wedge it in and then hole your putts. Whoever is the slickest on the greens is going to walk away with the jacket. It's another one of these tournaments that presents the winner with a jacket as garish as the jacket awarded to the winner of Colonial is. But I watched the last hour and a half because I was checking everything on Twitter and saw that Henley had holed a big putt in 16, and I saw the big fist pump, and then it was game on. I probably should have made the time to watch a bit more, but it just isn't a tournament right now that, you know, gathers the attention of the casual
No.
golf fan on a Sunday evening.
No, and it's unfortunate. I think it's more to do with its position in the schedule, as you said. Like, you know, the big guys from the PGA Championship, the big guys are all going to kind of hold firm, and some will come back for a Memorial. In fact, Rory's teeing it up this year at Memorial. He didn't last year, but for me, I agree with you. I think Colonial, maybe it's to do with the history and its association with Ben Hogan. What's the name of the guy? Like, oh, that's great story that the caddy at Colonial tells of like that Hogan used to sit at the back of the course, just like hitting balls, and just the sound of it was just so pure, so pure. And if Ben Hogan ever mishit a shot, it was almost like a talking point in the clubhouse that you could hear him. And there's something really beautiful about that. And I can't remember the guy's name, but is it Jody something or other tells that story about that, like he's shagging fly balls for him, so he's out in the thing, like, you know, and he keep and Hogan hits them, and he's like ducking out of the way, and then Ho after a little while, and he keeps ducking out of the way of the shots, but after a little while, Hogan kind of beckons him in, and he calls him in, and he goes like, what? And he goes, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm trying to avoid you. I'm trying not to get hit, Mr. Hogan. And he goes, yeah, but I'm aiming to drop them short of you, so you can just pick it up and put it into the bucket. Stop running away from it, will you? I'm not going to hit you. Which I liked. No, I agree. I think, look, if Colonial was in another part of the schedule, I think it would be a much more, you know, there'd be bigger names attached to it. But no, I agree. I think it's really, really nice. Actually, before we, I wanted to ask you about Ben Griffin. Okay, so Ben Griffin was defending champ. So, he had a beautiful front nine on the Sunday, 30 coming out, and then look, bogeyed the 11th, the par five, which obviously disappointed him. Posted 11 under, had the clubhouse lead for a little bit. But here's the thing, right? Four top 15 finishes in the last five starts. He came runner up to Scotty at Memorial last year. I'm going to go with, I know we're going to talk about Memorial shortly, but I have to say, I'm liking Ben Griffin for this week.
Okay. You know, I'm not sure what to do with that statement. It's not the most exciting thing you've ever said.
No, it's not, but I'm just saying it's just that, like, you know the way, so, like, sometimes in golf punditry is that, like, particularly when you're far away and you're watching it on TV, it's very easy to go, oh, the guy who fell short or who doubled the last to miss out or whatever, is to kind of just go, oh well, and then nothing. But what maybe is the illustrative point is that like he's showing a lot of good form. Look, he can play around Memorial. He showed it last year. As I said, he's had four top 15s in the last five starts. There's a consistency there. Excuse me. Sorry, forgive me. And even though he clearly when he came third, I don't know. I don't know. There's something about I don't know. I'm not saying Ben Griffin's the most interesting golfer in the world, but certainly he's in good form.
Yeah, no, he's playing solid and consistently, and he was thereabouts Sunday without ever it really feeling like he was right in the mix. But he is an archetypal PGA Tour player, really. There's so many like him that
Yeah,
you could
that's true.
almost, it's hard to believe that
He
he
has
was a
nice
Ryder Cup player
sunglasses.
last year. You know, it's made Ben Griffin. If you were in a quiz and you were asked to name the 2025 US Ryder Cup team and you were to miss one out, he's most likely, unfortunately for him, to be the one that
No, I
missed out.
know. He has nice sunglasses. I said to you at the beginning, at the top of the pod, that Johnny Caldwell will join us, and indeed he has.
Hi,
Johnny,
Phil.
how are you?
Well, you well?
I'm very, very well. We're
Good.
just we're discussing the also-rans at the Charles Schwab.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Dave is making it very clear that they're not particularly interesting, but
Well,
that's
as you can
cool.
see, Fiona, as soon as you finish that sentence, Johnny moved a little closer to the edge of his seat there.
Hey, Johnny, before
I'm
we go
hanging off
on, before we move on to the other business at hand, have you ever played the West Course at Wentworth?
Yes, on
I
three
played it on
occasions.
Sunday.
Yes, tremendous.
Unbelievable.
Oh yeah, it's a treat. It's a real treat, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
beautiful. Oh, it's absolutely
It's an
incredible.
absolute stunner. Anyway, look,
Yeah,
I just
tremendous.
want I'm basking in the reflected glory of a friend inviting me. So
Yeah. Well, I had a trip like that as well this week to Adare Manor. A
Oh, did you
friend invited
play?
me. Yeah, we played on Tuesday. Yeah.
And
Oh, it's spectacular. Yeah. The
yeah.
new grasses and everything, bedding in and seeing a little bit of rough, which is unusual.
That's right.
Yeah, but incredible. Again, like a real treat, isn't it? Somewhere like that.
Oh, she'll love it.
Yeah, it's a treat. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I remember when the previous shareholders of Golf Weekly, Nathan, Joe, and myself were invited down to play Adair, I don't know, 4 years ago maybe. And we recorded the pod from there. And to say that we were in a state of giddy excitement about
Oh
the
yeah.
experience of having played is an understatement.
Oh yeah. That starts on the journey down.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
really
it's
was. And
incredible.
also, we were very lucky because we had great weather. Did you have good weather? Tuesday was okay, was it?
Tuesday we got a shower of rain and a bit of wind, but listen, we can put up with that. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah,
Okay, grand.
absolutely fine for a place to go. Yeah.
Dave, will you come out and play golf with us one day, will you?
Oh, well, I don't recall turning down any invitations to play golf in the very recent past. So, in order for me to not turn up to play golf, which I have to be asked first.
The last time I played golf with you is, if I'm not mistaken, was we played the Jameson Links, the then Portmarnock Links, now renamed the Jameson Links.
Yeah, probably. That would be a guy. I think I played maybe two rounds of golf in the last 4 years. So,
Oh, geez.
that will change someday when the
I hope
Chislers
so.
are old enough to fend for themselves. But for the moment, it'll have to be a bit of watching and chatting to you guys, all things golf.
Ah. Just to wrap up on the Charles Schwab, so JJ Spaun minus 10, missed three putts inside 8 feet on the back nine, which is a little bit surprising. Justin Thomas, Jesus, there's another man who couldn't buy a putt. Weirdly enough, played the par fives in even par for the week, and this is for a guy with power. Oberg was the favorite going into the tournament. Just look, yeah, poor short game. I don't know, Johnny, I don't know if you watched much of it or if you had any overriding thoughts.
I didn't see a whole lot of it, to be honest. No, I didn't. I didn't catch a whole lot. Busy, busy doing lessons and family things and all that sort of stuff.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I keep my golf watching for the majors and for the
Okay.
Rory McIlroys.
Well, I guess, and then I guess the other takeaway point, and not necessarily a positive one, is that like Ricky Fowler, who, look, he made four birdies in his first six holes on Friday. Looked fairly kind of dead set on making the cut. Then 7 over 42. Like, I'd be happy with a 42 in the back nine. I mean, off the tips, I'd be delirious. I'd, you know, jump up and kiss you all. But like, yeah, miss the cut, like shock and stuff. Anyway, yeah, Ricky Fowler.
Where does that come from, you know? For, like you say, get off the a flyer and then whew, the game disappears a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know that, like, just a little teaser for, we'll talk about Memorial and the US Open, the Women's Open at Riviera in a second, but I don't know if you saw this, but Rory played Shinnecock ahead of next week.
Yeah, I heard Harry flew out there to meet him there.
Yeah.
Was due to play with Harry on Saturday, actually, but with a few other things, again, family things and weather or not, I pulled the plug on it. But
oh, really?
He's been playing a little bit at Clandeboy there, obviously with having a bit more time off. He's been home and the weather's been okay. So, yeah, he's been kicking about there, you know, two or three times a week, getting a few games in.
I mean, obviously he's a sensational golfer, but how good is his game at the moment?
I don't know, actually. He does tell me that it's not great, but I'm sure, you know, not
yeah,
great.
But it's all relative,
you know,
isn't it?
I don't even know how he can manage to play golf when he watches Rory play. You know, must be sticking and watching that stuff, you know.
He's scratch, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. If not, probably plus one, plus two. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He plays at a good level. Yeah. I know he plays a lot more tennis than he does golf, but.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Very, very good tennis player. Yeah. Excellent tennis player. Yeah. Yep.
Of course he is. Jesus.
I know. Sickening, isn't it? Yeah.
It is sickening. He's handsome. You know, he's on the bag of, you know, the world's most famous golfer.
He's also a lovely guy as well. You know,
I've heard nothing. Oh, and then, oddly enough, I'll tell you a little anecdote. So last year, ahead of the Irish Open at the K Club, Gary, who obviously knows Rory, so he was chatting to him during the practice round. And he said, listen, will you give the lads a few minutes? And he goes, yeah, listen, let me hit the drive and we can chat on the way up to the ball. And it's always a good thing that Rory McIlroy hits a massive ball because you have plenty of time to walk up and chat. But anyway, so it almost felt like we were doorstepping him a little bit on the ninth fairway. But you know what? Rory was so gracious and brilliant. And it was definitely one of like the interview highlights of last year.
Yeah.
But then I noticed that Harry was not happy about the whole thing, because I think Harry is very protective of his player. And I think Harry felt that, like, you know, maybe better procedure should have been followed.
Okay,
and in fairness, and this is very, I say this with all respect for Harry. Afterwards, it's like I felt a little sheepish because it was clear that Harry wasn't that happy. But at the same time, I really respected that the guy had, like, you know, he was just like, no, my number one priority is to take care of my player and the rest of us can all piss off. I thought that was great. But look, it was.
It is great, isn't it, that he does that sort of stuff for him. Yeah. Make sure everything's done properly. And nothing, I suppose, you know, Harry potentially sees it as a bit of a distraction to their prep or whatever.
Sure.
But listen, Rory's obviously comfortable enough to do it.
Look,
at the end of the day, Rory makes the calls, doesn't he? You know.
And look, it worked out because Rory,
it worked because it worked out any better.
Listen, the 5 or 6 minutes we had with him were terrific, and obviously he's still basking in the joys of that first Masters win and all the rest of it. Anyway, look. So the top line from Shinnecock from McIlroy is that he thinks it's fairer than it was in 2018. The fairways are wider, but the first cut, he's looking 5 inches. And like, if you miss the fairway, you deserve a bad lie. So keep it on the fairway and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, we seen that also at the PGA, didn't we? You know, an emphasis on hitting it on the fairway. You know, Aaron Rye, they obviously did a great job of that. And
yeah.
Getting control of your golf ball, regardless of, you know, maybe being 20, 30, 40, 50 yards behind some guys that are hitting the way
That's
out
it.
There. But he's got control of his ball into those greens and those pin positions and the wind blowing. And, you know, you start losing control of your ball. It's hard to get near the flags. You're three putting, you're all those sorts of things. So, yeah.
And it's not even, Dave, like the first cut is going to be particularly wide. Apparently it's 3 paces before you hit the fescue. Like, it's going to be penal if you're offline. Like, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, well, as it should be.
I know, I agree.
You know, I sometimes get tired of watching big tournaments, and the the commentator will tell you, oh, this is offline. And then he finds himself in the first cut, and he's arguably got a better lie in the first cut than he would if he was on the fairway, because he gets to control the spin a little bit more. And if the fairways are more generous than they have been at previous iterations of the US Open at Shinnecock, then you do deserve to be punished severely if you do miss the fairway. It also makes it harder to separate yourself from the field, which is what we want. We don't exactly want what we saw at the PGA Championship, where the only reason the leaderboard was chock-a-block is because no one could get anything going. But at the same time, you want to see guys being forced to hit good tee shots. McIlroy's driving was awful at the PGA Championship, and yet he was still just about in contention. But that's what cost him a chance to track down Aaron Ryan the back nine on the Sunday. His comments on the green speeds were really interesting.
They were, weren't they?
It was politely delivered in typical Rory McIlroy fashion, but it was a little warning shot across the bows of the USGA. These greens are already quick enough.
Don't make them quicker.
There's no need. The forecast is good weather-wise. It's meant to be mid to low to mid 20s, all sunshine. So the golf course is going to dry out and firm up anyway. And McIlroy is just giving that little warning that, you know, that these greens could get away from you pretty quickly. Now, obviously, the professionals would say that. The pros do want to be in a position where they can hold more putts. And we've seen previous US Opens where the USGA has almost held its hand up in the aftermath and admitted that they lost the greens. We saw what Phil Mickelson did a few years ago, where he practically caught a putt before it even came to rest because he was just so frustrated with what was happening on the greens. So look, they have to get the right balance. They know the shit show that comes their way if they get it wrong. So they will find the right balance.
Before all of that, obviously, and that's something to look forward to, we have the 50th anniversary of Memorial. So Jack's tournament, interesting. There's only 72 players in the field. Top 50 in ties make the weekend. So this is the second last signature event of the year. And I guess the top story is that you've got Scottie Scheffler, who is looking to win it three times in a row.
He's a heavy favorite too, isn't he?
3-1 or something.
Yes, I've seen a 7-2. Crazy.
Yeah, come here. I realize the field is limited, so it's not quite half, but it's near enough half. Actually, no, it is. It's half the regular PGA field, but those odds are insane.
Oh yeah, crazy. But I mean, going for a three-peat, the place suits him. It's about, you know, accuracy and spin control and distance control and, you know, again, keeping it in the short stuff, having control of your ball to these greens, firm, no doubt, going to be firm greens like most years, unless the weather dictates. But I think he is the best at controlling his ball flight and hitting all sorts of shapes and finding a way to get it into certain flags from certain places.
Dave, what's your thought on the three-peat?
It'd be a pretty big achievement for what is one of the iconic regular tour events on the schedule. And it would obviously be more than just a three-peat, because it would be a signal that Scottie Scheffler's got his game back, particularly given the depth of the field this week, given that he is days away from teeing it up at the US Open, where he looks to complete the Grand Slam. So it's an absolutely massive 10 days in the golfing life of Scottie Scheffler. Obviously, he'd trade any victory for a defeat this week if it meant he could, you know, lift the US Open trophy next weekend. But if he was to win this weekend, he's going to heap even more favoritism and maybe potentially even more pressure on himself going into Shinnecock Hills in a week's time. But he just hasn't had his A game with them really all season, bar the very early couple of weeks of his schedule. So for him to win and make it 3-0 around Jack's Place, and that's obviously special for any golfer, and he is one of those players that seems to take legacy and the history of the game pretty seriously, it would be massive for him. But this is the most important major of his career coming up next week. Whether he's completely dialed in and totally targeting a win this weekend as he would in any other week, I'm not 100% sure.
If he does win, so he'll achieve the three-peat. Now, there's 17 players in the history of the PGA, but only three in the modern era. Do you know who they are?
That have won the same tournament 3 years in a row?
Yeah.
One would have to be Tiger Woods, wouldn't it?
Yes. I mean, Tiger Woods done it like three times in three different tournaments. I think he's won Arnold Palmer like multiple times. He won He's won, yeah. Didn't he win at Torrey Pines? Yeah, he's got like multiple three-peats, but so.
Oh, Stuart
Dickinson
Appleby.
win.
Very,
Oh my
Jesus.
God. Stuart
Very
Appleby
good.
in Hawaii.
Yes, he's won what was then the Mercedes, now the Century.
Tournament champion sort of thing, isn't it? Or
Pull
whatever.
that out of the bag.
That was excellent. Go on,
Yeah,
there's one
that's
more.
true.
Did Mickelson win the AT&T by 3 years in a row? No.
New.
Marco Mira, did he win
Nope.
it?
It's
No.
Steve
Duval.
Stricker.
Steve Stricker. What? Oh, yeah, sure.
Steve
What
Stricker.
was that,
He
the
won the
Wyndham or something?
Sanford International
Right.
3 years in a row.
Okay.
I
Very
mean,
memorable. Very memorable.
I know it does. And yeah.
Yeah, very good. Very
There you
good.
go.
Yeah, so yeah, Scottie Scheffler would certainly improve that.
Yeah, it all of a
Those,
sudden become more interesting this.
exactly. Yeah.
Because I was scouring the golfing headlines this morning, and I saw one headline that said Tiger Woods to miss all four majors for the second year in a row. And I'm like, I don't know, is that a headline? Is that news? Is that like, Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods now 50. That, it seems that's just, anyway, look. Before, like, I want to talk more about the memorial, but just before I forget, I don't know, as a journalist, maybe this would see Sports Illustrated announced during the week that they were getting rid of their golf department. So Bob Harrig has been made redundant. I mean, I'm assuming they'll cover golf on a need only basis rather than having like a fixed golf team within, what is America's most illustrious sports magazine. So I just think,
Interesting, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah, I
It's
wonder.
another blow to the coverage of the game, isn't it? And look, us in Ireland here, fully aware of the dynamics of this, because you go back 10, 15 years, each of the main newspapers in this country had a golf correspondent. That is no longer the case. You know,
No.
the days where you had the Irish Independent, the Irish Times, having the same guy writing every week, was they're long gone. And long columns on a Sunday afternoon, no matter what part of the year we were focusing on, by Dermot Galease or somebody, we knew that they were going. It's been happening in the British media as well, so it was only a matter of time before it started to become more present in the US. And look, Sports Illustrated has had its difficulties across all of its sports departments for quite some time now. It's just the way the world of sports media has gone. And yeah, it is another blow to the coverage of the game, but it's probably not a huge shock.
No, it's not a huge shock. I guess it's just marked with a tinge of sadness. And also, as you said, it's reflective of general changes within media. We had the New York Times, who basically now are, The Athletic is the one that does all their sport. The Washington Post have gutted their sports department. Yeah, it feels, I guess, in the era of instant reaction and YouTube videos instantly available, the idea of kind of reporting on what we've all seen happened yesterday just feels a bit redundant. But at the same time, I don't know, maybe as a crusty old journalist, I come here, lads. Speaking of crusty old, I was getting on the Lewis yesterday, right? And I've already got like so. I got fitted for clubs recently, and I have graphite shafts now. So, the lads I play with are like, come here, do you need the Zimmer frame when you get like, do we need to get you a caddy cut? And so, I'm dealing with all of that. So I got on the Lewis at Stephen's Green yesterday, and a young woman in her 20s, and I was carrying a bag, and a young woman in her 20s who's sitting down looked at me and went, "Oh, here, do you want to sit down?"
Oh, she heard about the graphite.
She must have heard about the graphite
My
shafts.
goodness.
And of course, with whatever shred of dignity I had left, I just went, "No, you're fine." I was like, "Jesus
But
Christ."
really, you wanted to say, didn't
I mean, I waited for her to get up and leave and then sat down. But
then
like,
you had it,
and then my knees were like, "Oh God, these aching knees." But I was like, I can't, that's the first time that's ever happened to me.
And
It's
not the
coming this
last.
all. It's going to come this all eventually.
Eventually, I mean, probably like I shouldn't have looked at her and went 6'7". No, I'm kidding.
Oh, man.
Anyway, enough tomfoolery. So Rory, as I said, he skipped it last year. So he's obviously holding true to his promise to have a thinner schedule this year. So he's only had six PGA Tour starts. Again, like, you know, he's obviously done well. McIlroy's a premium ball striker, but like, to your point, Johnny, about keeping it on the fairway at Shinnecock, I mean, so it is that you have to keep it on the fairway at Memorial as well.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, it's renowned for being a major championship test, isn't it? You know, the conditions, the how they can hopefully firm up the greens and make it really, really tough to play, and a premium on again being in the fairway and being able to stop the ball on those greens at those flags. You know, it is a major championship test. Maybe Rory sees it as an opportunity to sharpen up for next week. You know, I suppose the question is, I know he's getting a hard time for not playing a lot of golf part time and all this sort of stuff. But I mean, Tiger Woods did it for a long, long time, you know, planned the schedule, picked the schedule, peaked. Is Rory doing the same thing? Let's, you know, time will tell. But I
I
mean,
think,
he's certainly trimming the schedule.
Dave, I mean, is there anyone in their right mind, realistically, who has any kind of sure footing criticizing Rory for deciding what his schedule is going to be?
Well, no one in their right minds, no. There'll be
No.
plenty of irrational people that might have such a
Yeah.
view and vocalize it loud. But this is a tournament that he wants to win. You know, it's kind of on the bucket list of those who take their PGA Tour history seriously. He has already won at Bay Hill. He wants to win at Riviera, where he is yet to win, and he wants to win at Jack's Place as well. So he will be targeting a really good performance this week. But obviously, everything is couched by the fact that they all have to head to Shinnecock Hills in a week's time, and it could potentially be a long, grueling week in the heat and fast greens and digging the ball out of deep rough and all the pressure that goes with it. And look, this will come up when we preview the US Open next week, but like, he's only got one of those. So yes, he is the greatest European golfer of all time. He is a couple of majors away from being in the top 10 all-time greats, but he has to throw in another US Open at some point. It would be a lovely way to go into next week if he was to win this week, and he obviously hasn't been in the winner's circle this season, so it'd be a nice place to start. It'd be another one off the bucket list for him. And I always got the sense watching him at the PGA Championship that he was not far away from being really close to his A game. And sorry, I say he hasn't won. I'm talking the regular tour events.
Yeah,
He
regular tour, yeah.
walked off with a Masters, but the driver is his cheat code, and it let him down badly at the PGA Championship. And unless another element of his game deserts him in the next 10 days or so, if he has managed to tighten up things off the tee, he's obviously going to be in contention this week, and he's going to come very close to winning two out of three majors in 2026 next week.
Yeah, I'm looking down the other favorites and plucking names. Cameron Young, 13-1, kind of struggled a bit at Aronimink. Hasn't played particularly well around Memorial, but you know he's clearly playing. I mean, he's a very, very good player. Xander Schauffele is 18-1. Oberg, despite his indifferent performances last week, is 20. Matt Fitzpatrick, 21s. This is a guy with 3 wins this. I didn't realize 3 wins this season.
Yeah,
Leads the
20 to
field
one.
in
Yeah.
strokes gained around the green over the last 3 months, so he's clearly in very, very good touch. And then everybody's favorite, Patrick Cantlay, 26-1, who's won Memorial twice.
Where's your money going? Not Scottie Scheffler anyway. 7-2
He's
is
already
already
picked
in,
Ben
right?
Griffin, Johnny, before you came on.
So this
Ben
is what I
Griffin,
was
yeah,
saying. So
absolutely.
Johnny,
Ben's
I'm
playing
going with Ben
fantastic.
Griffin. And I'll repeat why briefly, just my thought is that, like, look, he played well. It didn't happen for him last week, but he was beaten by Scheffler at Memorial last year. He's had top 15s in 4 of the last 5 starts. He's in good touch.
He's in good
Like,
form, yeah, for
I
sure.
don't think he's setting the world necessarily. He's not, like, you know, making top headlines, but I think this is a sneaky good player who showed he can play Memorial, and I think he's going to have a good week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you say, in fine form. How many wins has he got? Career? Three, maybe. You know, this would probably be a big step up in terms of a win for him. But yeah, absolutely, in great form. And if we're looking at prices, you know, you're going to get some
That's
value
it.
for money there, aren't you? You know, yeah. I
100%.
mean, yeah, hits it very, very high. Can stop it on a dime, I guess. You know, that's the sort of stuff we got to be looking at for Memorial if it gets that the firmness to it.
Obviously, because it's Jack's, because it's Muirfield and it's Jack's tournament, so this is the one time of year where the golfing world kind of turns its attentions to Nicklaus. I will say this, my thoughts on Nicklaus talking have evolved over the years. There was a point where, like, it was like old man yells at clouds, and it was just like, all right, Jack, just go away, will you? But I think he's gotten so old, and so he's in that kind of like, I have zero fucks to give about what anybody thinks.
Yeah.
That I am just going to speak my mind. And like, look, obviously this is a guy who has been, you know, central to golf for 60 plus years. So the two points that he was making, one was, is that he thinks the manufacturers are leaning on the players to resist rollback. That the manufacturers are getting into the players' ears and going, you know, like, oh, you know, oh, we won't be able to, you know, if the rollback happens, you know, that deal we have just won't be as lucrative. And so the players are reluctant to cut their nose off to spite their faces. And so the rollback issue just kind of lingers on, not dead or anything, but at the same time, no real action is being taken. Any thoughts on that particular opinion of Jack's?
Cam Young, certainly, is Cam Young not using the ball already?
And the rollback ball, the one that's going to go ball. At less distance, yeah.
Yeah, and still pumping it out there, 320 yards in the air, whatever, 190 ball speeds, you know. So, I mean, I just don't know if he's using it already. You know, I think I hear there's numerous balls on the market that are going to be, you know, are already legal for that rollback. You know, I just don't know where it's going to go. Yeah, I mean, the long hitters are still going to be the long hitters. They're still going to hit less clubs in the greens. Yeah, I just don't know. I really don't know where it's going. You know, Jack said some other things about the scheduling and
whatnot. Yeah, so let's talk about that.
You know,
I thought that again was quite both insightful and incendiary. It was like, you know, he's worried about the compression, like you're clustering major signature events and playoffs into this condensed stretch in the calendar. And it's not good for the players. It's not good for the PGA Tour, which flies in the face of Brian Rolapp and the schedulers who are like, no, this is the way, this is where we're going to get eyes on the ball, you know?
Yeah. Is that, along with the DP World Tour, to allow players to come, you know, to Europe and play the big events in Europe? It's obviously a year-round scheduling thing between the two tours.
Yeah.
The PGA Tour ram it all in, like you say, those signature events, those big events, the majors. And then the DP World Tour have their big events outside of those sort of schedules, so guys can come and play. But, I mean, yeah, look, you've got Rory McIlroy that's not going to play, you know, more than 3 weeks in a row, if he even plays 3 weeks in a row, you know. But you've got guys playing 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks in a row on the PGA Tour. You know, it's a lot of golf. Yeah, condensed. Yeah.
What do you think, Dave?
Well, firstly, on the rollback from Jack, his contention that this is like, you know, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, I agree with it. It's going to take a few yards off the ball potentially, but it's not going to come close to resolving the problems caused by the ball going as far and players being able to hit the ball as far. But look, that's a different debate. Yeah, there's already a certain part of the golf calendar where we feel the big events are just coming too thick and fast and too quickly, that you almost don't have time to digest as much as you would like the biggest events before you're kind of getting stuck into the next one. Specifically, I'm talking about the four majors being crammed in on top of each other and having to wait from the middle of July to the second week in April from the Open to the Masters. It's just too long. And now they're trying to cram the entire schedule into 7 months. They will feel, look, there are tournaments at the back end of the year that nobody watches, nobody cares about. It's competing with the NFL. And the best way to economize and be as efficient as possible when it comes to getting eyeballs on our sport is to try and avoid those clashes with distractions in other codes. But if that means that you're actually lowering eyeballs on your principal events in that 7 month window, well, maybe, you know, you're defeating the objective that you're trying to process. I don't think we'll really know until we see it play out for the first couple of years. But no matter what way they put their schedule together, you are going to have the biggest names skipping tournaments. They can't ever fix that. Like, McIlroy has totally done a 360 on his feelings and his stance on this debate, because it's only a couple of years ago where he welcomed these signature events and he was all in favour of fines and players for not turning up to the to every single signature event. And sure, after his one of his biggest disappointments at a major championship, he decided the following week not to rock up to Harbortown. I think it was Harbortown that the event.
That's right. Yep.
So, yeah. And now, obviously, he's acknowledging loudly this week that the schedule that he plans on playing this and next season means he may not even make the FedEx Cup playoffs. So that's how much disdain he's got for the PGA schedule in whatever iteration it shows up in over the next 3 to 5 years. For and Jack, he won't be the only one to share those thoughts.
Yeah, for Jack, like his comments were really focused on the fact that the players need time to recover mentally, and that if they don't have that time to recover, that their performance suffers, particularly when you have like break-free golf. And that ultimately the ones that lose out are the fans, because they're your players dropping out and not showing up, or players not performing to the best of their ability. I mean, obviously it's a contentious opinion. I'm very, very pleased that Nicholas feels like, particularly, like he's gotten to that point where he's hosting his tournament and he never feels the need to be diplomatic about this stuff at all. He's just like, lads, I'm just going to say what I think and you can all deal with it.
Well, he's finally taking a leaf out of the Gary Player playbook after all these years. I mean, Player has been in that place for a long time where he has no more F's to give, and he's just going to say whatever comes into his mind. But it is interesting, like his comments this week, and obviously he gets this plinth to speak from every year when he's hosting the tournament at Memorial, how central to the development of the future of the game he still believes himself to be. Initially when he was asked about the rollback and asked about the changes to the PGA Tour schedule, he was a little reticent to actually get into the meat and drink of it, but he was pushed on because he actually said, no, I haven't been able to vocalize my thoughts on this to Brian Rolapp and the PGA Tour hierarchy.
Yeah.
As if they are almost awaiting a meeting with Jack so that they can formalize things. Whereas, I mean, is Jack Nicklaus still a relevant voice in the game?
I would argue that the more the higher-ups within the PGA Tour, I'm not saying Brian Rolapp himself, but that the higher-ups, they pay tribute to Jack Nicklaus as one of the greats of the game. The more effusive they are in their tributes to him, the less relevant they have insisted he becomes. You know, it's just he's the aging hero, but not really. They don't want him in the room making any kind of decisions, nor realistically as a man who doesn't play or, you know, I mean, he's obviously a... I think Nicholas though, but I think, look, fans listen and he definitely gets headlines, so, you know.
Yeah, and players, I think, probably listen as well to
Do
what
they?
Jack. Well, you know, well, the players maybe have, I'm not going to say that these guys that are running the PGA Tour don't have a respect for Jack Nicklaus, but the players certainly have a respect in terms of playing. You know,
sure. And, look, yeah, he's an 18-time major winner.
Yeah,
you know, he knows of what he speaks. Surely.
Well, look, they respect his right to have an opinion.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Absolutely.
They're certainly not going to, I mean, the people who should be deciding the structure of the PGA Tour as it goes forward are the current players and not somebody who retired 30 years ago.
No, it's true. Lads, I realise time is against us, but we need to talk about the most important event of the week. We've left it to last, and that's the US Women's Open, which is at Riviera. So, it's the first time that Riviera is hosting a USGA's Women's Championship. Although, weirdly enough, Riviera has this really rare play. I don't know if you know this, but at the 1945 LA Open, which was then... So this is the one where Sam Snead birdied the final hole to beat Byron Nelson, just in case you were worried. But that Babe Dickerson Zaharias, she was the first and only woman to make the cut at a PGA Tour event ever in history.
Did not know that.
There you go.
Very good. Yeah.
So she'd qualified. She'd done Monday qualifying, shot 76, 76, and then played the weekend. So apparently she played seven, not apparently, I'm just looking at the stats right here. She played seven PGA Tour events during her career, including three appearances at the LA Open. But like, again, as a bit of golfing history, that 1945 performance of being the first and to date only woman ever to make the cut in a men's event is really interesting. But anyway, Nelly Korda, like, obviously won the Chevron by five. She had a tied eighth finish at the Queen City Championship in May. Since then, she's had three victories, three runner-ups, all in six starts. Like, clearly she's the one to beat.
She's the one, isn't she? Yeah. And similar similar odds, I believe, to Scottie Scheffler for this week's.
Yeah, I'm looking here. Her betting, 7-2. Yeah. Come here. And the US Open was the one. Do you remember was it 2 years ago where she was again on the hottest streak of form, and did she have a 12 or something at the par or whatever it was? She had an 80. She opened with an 80 at Lancaster, but did that include like some disaster where it was just like she was playing like someone who'd never ever swung a golf club in her life. Yeah.
Well, she is in some fine form now, isn't she? Again,
and she's so favored that some of the bookmakers are offering odds without Nelly Korda.
So, yeah, well,
Korda versus the field.
Yeah.
And she is obviously going to start as the big favorite. And you would think she has the game that would suit Riviera. I'm not sure how different a golf course it'll be in terms of its playability in comparison to what we're used to seeing at the LA Open every year or Riviera every year. But it's what caught my eye this week in the build up to it. This is the largest purse ever for a women's golf event. $2.4 million for the winner. That's astonishing. That just shows where the game has come, how far it has come in such a short space of time. And the money in the women's game now it's astronomical.
Do you think that, I mean, obviously part of the problem with the women's game, maybe not with the women's US Open, but generally with a lot of events, is it's difficult just to generate that wider interest. But hosting it at Riviera, which is such an iconic and instantly recognizable golf course for golf fans, surely that has to be an added incentive to sit and watch.
For sure, yeah. I think anytime Riviera is on, everybody's intrigued to watch and see what's going on at Riviera. You know, doesn't matter if it's the men's event, if it's a women's US Open, Riviera draws attention to whatever's happening there. So, you know, I mean, I know for sure I'll probably watch a little more of it because it's Riviera. It's Riviera. It's just a special place in the history of the game, and you know, it is a joy to watch and see how it plays, and it can play so different, you know. But I think Nelly certainly has the game there with her ability to drive the ball so well.
So it's the combination of those two factors, this iconic golf course and a presumptive champion who is just the best player in the game. You know, I mean, there's a couple, but like who's just, she's the star and she's playing well. It's a formula for a good tournament.
For a great tournament, and great viewing. Yeah, absolutely.
And normally, if it's up against a major event on the PGA Tour, the Memorial being one of those iconic events, that it can be very difficult to find the time to watch. But the fact that it's in California this year means that you can watch the conclusion of the Memorial, and then you can switch over, and there'll probably still be much of the backline left on the US Open. So it might work out nicely for golf obsessives this weekend.
I should say, so as I said, Nelly Korda is 7-2. And then hot on her heels is Gino Titico at 9-1, who again, two wins this season. Four shot win at the Americas Open. Like, she's a player. Like, holy moly, she's a baller.
Yeah. Very impressive, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm looking who else. Hyuju Kim is at 13s, along with Ruin and Ying. Hannah Green's at 18-1. She's had two wins this year. Lydia Ko, 27. Charlie Hull at 34-1. Minji Lee, 30-1. But yeah. Who do you like for this? Oh, I guess Nelly. I don't know.
Nelly's going to be hard to beat, isn't she? Again, you know, I think she's the best driver of the ball in the game of golf, maybe. You know, she's very, very straight, but can shape it, you know, generally very straight, but can shape it both ways, hold those fairways that slope and cross. And yeah, I think she's going to be very, very difficult to beat.
Right. On that happy note, Johnny, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Appreciate that. And Dave, as always, a pleasure. Look, plenty of golf to watch this weekend. The Memorial, the US Women's Open. If you're sitting in, watching on the couch, it'll be a feast, hopefully, and with some interesting winners. Lads, thank you very, very much. Shane and Nathan will be back. Or actually, Shane and Nathan, I presume, are recording today. So you might have a bumper crop of Golf Weekly product today with the Ryan line, which I'm assuming is going to be recorded. I'm not being told otherwise. So anyway, we'll talk to you again next week. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little JD starter kit right here.